You will notice with the saga continues that I am continuing the Star Wars references from last week. I am a huge Star Wars fan, so we are David Solomon and the Temple. The saga continues, and it does indeed continue. So far, we have looked at the breakdown of a relationship between God and humankind through the story of Adam and Eve and the fall. We've seen the restoration of that relationship between the covenant between God and Abraham, and last week we were looking at Moses as he leads God's people, the nation Israel. And tonight we do continue that story of the nation of Israel and God's working for and through them. And we start to really pick up pace. We've actually put our finger on the fast forward button, probably about 500 years from where we were last week to where we are this week. Because this week we're going to be looking at Saul being appointed the first king of Israel. Then we're going to move through to the story of King David, and then on to his son Solomon and the building of the temple. We have come a long way from this story last week that we were looking at from Moses. We've had an exodus out of Egypt, 40 years spent in the desert, and the entering of the promised land led by Joshua, who comes after Moses. But you see, we now find ourselves in a place where the nation of Israel are now longing for a leader, a recognized leader. See, because they've been moving along with God as their king, and prophets or judges being God's representative on earth who would settle any disputes that there might have been. But now they're seeing what's happening in what we would see as other countries, or more kind of closely tied, the clans that we used to have in Scotland. They're seeing groups of people that have their own king that are surrounding this nation of Israel, and they are longing for their own one. They're seeing groups of people like the Philistines, who will make a short cameo appearance shortly, and they're demanding that they too have a king of their own. And as I say, this is something of a departure from where they've been, because they've been used to having God as their king. And Samuel is trying to tell them, you know, God's king. We don't need an earthly king. And God says to him, look, don't worry about it. It's not you that they're turning their backs on. It's me. Give them their king. And we look at it and we're thinking they've fallen into this human thing of coveting what other people have. But I'm kind of wondering whether they too were also quite frightened as they're being surrounded by a huge group of nations around them who all have their warrior-like kings. Maybe they're looking for a strong leader. For those of you that are Facebook savvy, you might have seen that I put up a few readings that might help you tonight. I tasked you with reading about 3 or 4 books in the Bible, but I knew that some of you might not have the time to be able to do that, so I gave you some passages, but then I realized that I hadn't actually tasked you with reading about the story of Samuel, this important man who was given the task of anointing and appointing the first human king of Israel. And we read in 1 Samuel 10 that man would be Saul. Saul would become the first anointed king of Israel. And things start off well. He seems like a great candidate to be the first king. He's well-liked. He's able to inspire others. He leads well. He's faithful. He's a servant. He even manages to inspire a young boy, a young Israelite boy, to stand toe-to-toe with a Philistine giant named Goliath. And some of you might know that story, David and Goliath, where David takes a stone and defeats a giant and provides Israel with a victory. See, things are going well. Things are going well in this new kingdom that's been established, and Saul is the leader. This all was going well until one day as they're coming back from a victory, The crowds are lining the streets and they're all singing Saul's praises. Saul is an amazing king. He defeats our enemies by the thousand. And he's lapping up this praise of his people. But then the second verse comes. And that second verse is, we love David. He defeats our enemies by the tens of thousands. Saul starts to become extremely jealous at this point. Rather than feeling happy for his loyal servant, someone who has served him well and is faithful, he is consumed by jealousy. David is becoming more popular than he is. Saul begins to plot to kill him, and he becomes consumed by this jealousy where he descends into somewhat of a poor mental health. But what also unfolds is the amazing story of David. David's on the run. He is petrified because Saul has vowed that he's going to kill him. His mental health has got to the point where he wants to kill David. And David is on the run. He ends up pulling in together a ragtag of followers himself that kind of bring me to mind of Jesus kind of pulling together his 12 disciples, a whole bunch of weird and wonderful people that they're bringing together. But you see, David, throughout this, shows that while he has an opportunity to kill Saul, because one day we read, Saul, like we all do, needed to go and have a pee. So he takes himself off to the side by, and David gets so close to him that he could kill him. But he whaps off a little bit of the cloak. David shows this man unbelievable mercy, even although he knew that when Saul died, Samuel had already made the decision that David would be king and anointed him. That when Saul died, David would become king. But he doesn't take that opportunity. He shows Saul mercy. He shows the great character that would personify him. All these pictures that I'm showing you are from a TV series called The Bible. And I think you can get it on Netflix. It gets a bit Hollywood at times. However, it comes highly recommended. I love it. And I go back and you can actually buy the DVDs across in Faith Mission and they're brilliant. But anyway, plug over. David eventually becomes king when Saul eventually passes on. But you see, David's story to the outside world doesn't start off that great. He's the youngest and probably classed as the least impressive of his family to the outside world. Although we now know that through David's line, the Messiah would come. This was prophesied many times. And we're going to be looking at the Old Testament prophets next week when Sonny brings the message then. But we also know that David was no walkover as a boy. He goes toe-to-toe with a giant. He's filled with faith that he knows God is going to be with him. As Andrew was talking about earlier, he was also a skilled musician. We can read the book of Psalms. A lot of them are attributed to David. He was a songwriter. Don't know about the Bob Dylan, maybe the Kurt Cobain. No, I don't know. Shows you my style of music. But he's a skilled musician. And to go back to when Saul was having his kind of his poor mental health and fits of anger, David would play music to calm him down. And it worked in the beginning, but then his rage was just so much that it didn't. All starts off well for David. He's a good-looking man. He's a warrior. He's a great leader. He's very faithful. He's well-respected, faithful to God. But although the Messiah would come from his line, he's not Jesus and he's not perfect. You see, after ruling well for a number of years, he's made Israel a great kingdom. However, in one day, he broke half the Ten Commandments in one fell swoop. Because one day as he's walking around, his lovely house. He catches a beautiful woman bathing just off in the distance. He allows lust to consume him. As king, he can have whatever he likes, and he chooses Bathsheba, who's the name of the woman. They end up having sexual relations. She becomes pregnant. The problem is he's married and so is she. Her husband is a loyal servant of David. He's away fighting in the army. She becomes pregnant with David's child, and they come up with a plot to try and convince her husband that he is the father. However, as a loyal soldier at that time, the rule was that you didn't have sexual relations with your wife while you were in active service. So he refuses to do it. So it really puts David in a spot. So he then decides that he's going to have to kill him. But he doesn't do it himself. He sends him off into battle again, into danger. And ultimately, her husband dies. But that doesn't solve his problems, you see, because he's racked with guilt. He is a good man. He made a mistake. He allowed his passion and his lust to consume him, and he made a mistake. But the consequences are dire. And after insurrection, he does eventually become restored. He restores himself as king. But the problem is he never ever builds the permanent temple that he so longed to provide for the Ark of the Covenant, which was around in a tabernacle, in a tent. But he wanted to provide this amazing, amazing permanent temple that the ark could be held in, and he never ever gets round to it because of all the fallout of that mistake that he made. And you see, the building of the temple was left to his son Solomon. And we can read in 1 Kings 6 where the different dimensions of this building, and people who are far more artistic than me are able to kind of draw these beautiful pictures. And it's a fantastic sight. And Solomon built it. Not himself, he got other people to do it, but he managed to oversee this. See, this is my favorite passage in the entire Bible, almost. I say that about loads of passages, but this week, this is my favorite passage. 1 Kings 13. See, Solomon, as David's son, is probably most well known for his wisdom. And I love the story of how he achieves this receiving of wisdom, where God appears to him in a dream. And he asks him, "What can I do for you, Solomon? What can I give you?" And it absolutely amazes me that Solomon doesn't ask for eternal life. He doesn't ask for great wealth. He doesn't ask for protection for his family or anything. He asks for wisdom. You kind of think, you had the opportunity to have the keys to the literal kingdom here, the universe, and you choose wisdom. And he was a wise man. There's the books, Ecclesiastes, Proverbs, and he made a number of wise decisions. But you see, in God granting him wisdom, he didn't put a magic wand over him that everything that came to his head or anything that came out of his mouth was fantastic and wisdom-filled. God gave him the tools to be wise and to make wise decisions, but it's still on him to make those decisions. We're able to read about how he wished to make the distinction between good and evil, good and bad. He wanted his discerning heart that he could have make godly decisions. And again, after such a great start, and you might be guessing where we're going with this, he makes a mistake. Solomon shows that he too is flawed. And I kind of wonder why he was asking for wisdom. And then it kind of came to me. He's looked at his father, a very good man, a faithful, faithful man, faithful to God, faithful to others, but he made a mistake. He lacked wisdom with the Bathsheba, incident. And you look past that and you end up with looking at Saul, the first king, and you think he started off really well too, but he allowed jealousy to consume him, anger. So I can now understand why Solomon was asking for wisdom. He's wanting to not make the same mistakes that his father did and Saul did. He wants to be a good, godly leader of the nation of Israel. But as I say, he too is flawed. He's an extravagant man. And he also seems to have inherited his father David's eye for women. And I will live till I'm 100, and I will never understand how the wisest man to walk the planet thought at any point that it was a good idea to have more than one wife. And I'll leave. One is enough. 700 is just excessive. And you can go and you can read the story of Solomon. It's fascinating. So as we kind of come to wrap up, we see that Saul has been chosen as the first king of Israel. He starts off really, really well. He seemed to a good choice. However, he's flawed and he allows his jealousy to consume him. He ends up becoming jealous of someone who is his most loyal lieutenant, someone who would have went to the other end of the earth for him, refused to kill him, showed him mercy, but he wanted to kill him. We then read that David succeeds Saul as king and establishes a great kingdom, but again, after starting off well, he too is flawed. And although he redeems his position, he never gets round to building the temple that would have been his crowning achievement. That was left to Solomon. Solomon's the next king who possesses the tools of obtaining godly wisdom, but he couldn't figure out that only having one partner in crime was enough. He was very excessive with women. But he does build the temple that his father David wanted to build, but he is also flawed. And moving forward, you see a whole bunch of kings. If you read on from where we are, a whole bunch of kings, some of them are really bad. Others are good, and they kind of keep making the same mistakes because they're human beings and we're flawed. King David's story, though, echoes a lot of Jesus' story, where they're very, very faithful to God. However, there are temptations and trials in both their lives, and the difference is that Jesus was able to overcome those. And indeed, the theme of Messiah, which is quite prevalent in the Old Testament prophets, which again, as I say, we're going to be looking at that next week, that this coming king, this coming Messiah would be a king but better than David. So as good as David was, the Messiah, Jesus, would be better. And that's us come to the end of the talk.